Yeah, so what have you learned from reading other people's niche projects, from giving feedback? Cool, everybody. Thank you so much for all the check-ins. This is so great to read. Seems like things are going overall pretty well. Some people feeling a little bit behind in the assignments, which is totally understandable. And it seems like some overall kind of rewiring and people maybe seeing marketing in their business in a new way, which is great, which is wonderful. That's great. So, oh, these are just so exciting to read. Oh, it's so good to hear from you guys. Awesome. So, yeah, so we've been talking about, again, over the 6 weeks, this idea of the platform, the container, and the paths, getting really clear what we're about. Building a container, a boat, a sales funnel, whatever that represents that embodies that. And then the paths, how do we actually get people to find us? How do we turn on the water faucets so that we can get some water in our bucket? And last call, we talked about five of those, and I hope you all got the PDF, the transcript. I added a bunch of stuff in it. It's like double the size it was when it started. there's more. There's more. I'm so excited about the content that we're going to talk about today. More ideas of how you get clients to find you, how you make it really easy. And it seems so Maureen was saying struggling with hubs. So let's make sure Maureen and Deborah, you were sort of dittoing that. So with the hubs piece, let's make sure at the end of the call. We lift that up. So if you're struggling with hubs, we might be able to do some brainstorming for each other. Usually what's happening when there's a struggle for clarity about hubs and trying to find those, it's usually a sign that the platform is a bit fuzzy. And in particular, a sign that the journey is fuzzy. And in particular, within the journey, is a sign that the who is kind of fuzzy. Once that gets clear, the hubs usually come much more easily. So something to think about. Okay, so let's just jump into the content of what we're going to talk about today. So last week we talked about five paths. I believe we talked about writing, talked about presenting, talked about schmoozing, talked about social media presenting. We're going to talk about some other things. We're going to talk about hosting events, advertising, PR, virtual presenting, and doing free sessions. so let's start with my favorite, which is hosting. So I have been hosting events and gatherings for as long as I can remember professionally. When I was, gosh, in 1999, I started a project called Youth Jams in Santa Cruz, California. That was a part of a project called YES, Youth for Environmental Sanity, or YESWorld.org was the group. And we started this project called Youth Jams, and it was based on bringing together leading young change makers from around the world who were normally speaking at conferences, running conferences, and getting them together for a week to just hang out. And I saw the power of just getting cool folks together and not necessarily over-programming things, but just letting good people connect and trusting that good things would come from that. I host potlucks all the time. We have a network in Edmonton where we host the green drinks that a lot of you are probably familiar with, where folks in the green scene get together. So I've just seen the power and the impact on communities of hosting. So when we talk about hosting events, we're talking about bringing people together, and it's important. You know, Seth Godin wrote this book called Tribes, and there's a little bit of an excerpt in the piece that I just sent you, the transcript. And his notion of tribes is very similar to this idea of the niche, you know, sort of a community with a shared set of needs and experiences. And it's important to remember, in terms of word of mouth, which is one of the core paths, if not the core path, that people are going to find us along, word of mouth spreads within communities. So the tighter and stronger a community is, the faster word of mouth spreads. So a funny story to illustrate. There was this lady who came to my workshop in Calgary one time, and she had a relationship with an Amish community. And this community had made dried bison bones. So they would kiln dry these bison bones, and dogs really love them. And raw hide stuff can just get caught in a dog's stomach, and it's terrible. So this stuff was really healthy for the dogs and really great. And so she was going to – she wanted to sell them. So where does she go to sell them? Well, the obvious place is going to be a dog show, you know, where there are all these booths and things. It looks like Samia can't get on the call. If anyone can help her out, she just posted on the wall. That would be great. Thanks, everybody. So she went to this dog show, this dog fair, an outdoor thing. And it's, you know, a big park, and there are all these booths, and people are there with their dogs. And she goes to set up her booth, but she's brought is this big plastic bag full of these dog bones, or these bison bones, and for the dogs. And everyone else has these professional booths with these banners, and they're in uniforms, and they're doing interactive stuff. And when she gets to her tent, she puts her bag of stuff or bones on the table, and then goes off to get something. When she comes back, there are all these flies around the bones, and so it's because it's in the sun. And so she has to pull her table back into the tent, into the shade. And so it's like, you know, everybody else has got these beautiful front, exciting, engaging tents. And then there's like nothing with hers. You know, she's just a sad little bone lady in the back. And so she was there, but then, of course, what was interesting is it actually made it stand out more, because all the other tents were so awesome in the front, and this one was empty, so people would kind of look in to see what it was, and they saw the sad bone lady, and they would go talk to her, and she'd tell them about the bones, and they'd say, oh, so they'd get it, and they'd go with their bone, and they'd give it to their dog, and their dog would just go crazy over it, would like totally drop whatever else had been playing with, and would just work on that bone, and people nearby would just be like, whoa, what is that you gave your dog? It's like, oh, I just went to see the sad bone lady, and so they would like go with. By the end of this thing, she had the huge, like the biggest lineup. People were just lined up, like right lineup, so went right past all the other tents who were, you know, watching them all go to her, even though they spent all this money. And so, to me, what this says is that, again, with word of mouth, it's got to be remarkable. And so the bones were, but we've also got to make it easy to spread the word. And so part of what makes it easy is the tighter a community is, the easier it is for people to connect with each other. You know, when I started out, I was doing workshops for student councils, and which is, you know, cool and great. And student council advisors are who I need to talk to, because they're the ones who will make the financial decision. And yet there was no hub for them. There was no place they actually came together. So if I wanted to reach them, I had to do it one at a time, which is hard work. And it also made it impossible for them to endorse me to each other, because they never talked to each other. So at a dog show, it's this kind of artificially created tight-knit community for a few days where word of mouth spreads very, very fast. So for her to have gotten that much attention just regularly outside of this kind of a thing, it would have taken way longer. But so everything we can do to bring a community tighter is a win for us, but it's also a win for the community as a whole. I heard about somebody, he was a business consultant, and Allison, if I unmuted, would that allow Samia on? No, it's a different kind of thing. Thank you so much for helping out with that, Allison. So, sorry, I'm just pausing. Wrong access. Oh, did she enter the wrong? Samia, are you on the call? Let us know if when you make it on. I heard about this consultant in LA, and he would do workshops, and on a Saturday night, he would take everyone out for dinner at his favorite Italian restaurant. And I just thought that was so cool and classy. And I thought, man, I could do that. That's not that expensive. So I did that for a few workshops because, no matter how interactive a workshop is, it's still a workshop. And people don't interact as much. And I was like, I want to hang out with all these people. They're so cool. And so we went to a restaurant, but the music was a little loud, and people just kind of sat at their tables and didn't mingle, and so that didn't feel as great. So eventually it evolved into more of a house party or a loft space if I could find one. And that was awesome. But I also realized there'd be a chance for me to bring some of my favorite clients in Toronto, because that was where I was doing a lot of the workshops. So it was the people at the weekend plus my favorite clients I invited. And then I thought, oh, there are also these people who are hubs in the community who are just never ever going to come to my workshops. They don't need it, or they don't think they need it. So they're not going to come to my workshops, but they would totally come to a party that I hosted that had sweet networking. And so I want to post a link here. I want to, and I'm going to, of one of the parties. I call it the Green Grub and Gather. So if you go to the wall, you'll see that I'm posting it here. And I want to lift up a few things about this that I think make it work really well. Oh, it's taking forever to post. Ta-da! Okay, so you can check out this link. You'll see it at the very top of the group, the Green Grub and Gather. So you'll notice that at the very top it says Green Grub and Gather, little personal note from me, the number of spaces remaining. This one actually totally oversold. We had like 80 people there instead of 60. so every time I come back, I'll host a social event. And it has multiple benefits. Again, I get to connect with existing clients. I get to reconnect with some of my favorite clients, which is wonderful because those people are also some of my core referral sources. They're the ones who talk me up the most. And I just love these people, and it's really good to see them. So you'll see some basic information, the who, what, where, when, all that. But underneath it, this is the main thing. You'll see a whole list of who's there, the photo, their name, their bio, contact info. So what happens is as people are RSVPing for this party, I get their photo, I get their bio, and I put it up. And then I would reach out to people and say, hey, just so you can see who's coming, check this out. And as this list grows and grows, it gets more and more exciting to come to the party. people, aren't just going to come to my party because of me. They're going to come because it's going to be really good networking for them. So when they can look at this kind of a list and see, like, oh my God, all of those people are coming, I'm in. Which is how I've gotten like 60 to 80 people at these events in Toronto, even though I don't live in Toronto, et cetera. So when we talk about hosting events as a marketing tactic, I'm talking about hosting gatherings, hosting parties, events. Hosting could also be giving out an award. Allison Chan, was talking about this idea of doing a clinic where cyclists, who've been injured could come and work on their bike at a bike clinic, bike shop, but also get some physio assessments, little 5-minute assessments, and maybe some education. And she'd mentioned that a lot of them love to compare their kind of their war stories of like accidents they've been in and like crazy situations. And that turned into a thought of like, well, what if awards were given out every year, like a sort of bragging right awards. For the cyclist that had the craziest story that year, but maybe also then also a commemoration of cyclists who were lost that year, whether in a traffic accident or just members of the community who had passed on. But hosting an awards, hosting anything you can host brings community together. I love the idea of hosting an awards thing, because it takes you from a position where it's like we're trying to get something to we're giving something to the community. Instead of trying to get people's approval, we're the ones giving it, which I think is a powerful place to be in general. So hosting can play a lot of different ways. It can also mean if you're at somebody else's party, you kind of take the role of host and you play matchmaker all night. It's a super fun thing to do, and everyone will love you and remember you if you're at the party. And you just, like, meet everybody and, like, who are you? Like, what are you passionate about? What do you need next? Like, what's coming up next for you? What do you need? And then you just start introducing people to each other. I think that's also, without hosting an event yourself, that's a way you can play host. Also, if you're doing a trade show or something or a conference, consider hosting an after party at it where you bring people together. If nobody else is doing it and you do it, that positions you as the hub. And remember, with marketing, there's the cold, the warm, and the hot level. And the hot level is where you become the hub, right? The cold level, you approach people as a stranger. The warm level, you work through existing hubs. But at the hot level, you are the hub. And so hosting things puts you in that position of being the hub. So I want to talk just a bit more about the parties. What else to say? Yeah, so a number of my clients have done different themed ones or come up with different themes. I think it's nice. You want it to be a special thing, I think, where people feel like, oh, this is a really cool thing I'm being invited to, not just like come to a networking thing. There should be some twist that's authentic to your platform. So, you know, a woman who did Reiki was going to do a Japanese-themed party. An art therapist was going to do a party called Party Arty, where it was going to be at her home, and there was going to be a wall that people could paint on all night, and some, an easel with some paper out that people could be doodling on, clay and Lego, and just all sorts of forms of creative expression, fridge magnet poetry. Another lady who did... I think it was Tarot, was going to do kind of reading stuff. Was going to do a party called An Evening of Being Read, and where you could get read by all these different types of folks. And I think there's a literature component to it too, because she was a bit of a book reader. There was a lady who did laser acupuncture stuff. So she was going to host a future theme party with like tinfoil hats and everything. And, you know, kind of Star Trek themed. And there was a nutritionist who had this idea. His point of view was that if you ate the right thing 80% of the time, you could do the wrong thing 20% of the time. So he was going to host a party that was going to be his 20% party, so that people would – he'd only serve, like, the 20%. And because his thing was, like, if you're going to eat pastries, like, get them from the best bakery. Don't just eat anything. You know, if you're going to go there, if you're going to eat ice cream, get this full fat, amazing, incredible stuff. So the, he was going to do that. And I thought it was a really great idea. There's another lady who was a colon hydrotherapist. And I was like, wow, what's your theme for the party? And she was going to do a party called the Retox. And I was like, Retox? Like a boozer? And she was like, yeah, a total slammer. Because she's like, I spend all year detoxing people. So she thought it'd be fun to have a party where, you know, it was just a drinking party. And I was like, I thought it would be really cool if, you know, there's like a bucket of gummy worms when people came in so they could actually eat a parasite as they came into the party. Anyways, there's a lot of fun that can be had with this. I think you get the idea. So whatever the theme is, consider hosting a party on that theme. One of my clients in Toronto, David Jurassic, he's doing this idea. It was kind of a rolling niche that I was posting on Tim's stuff. So instead of like picking one niche, every he's got a kind of a general big circle, but every quarter he's going to pick a different theme. So the theme he's doing right now is the heart. So he was going to do a party where the whole theme about the party was the heart. And one of the things people were going to do is draw a picture of a heart. So there'd be all sorts of like craft supplies and crayons and stuff, and people would draw a picture of their own heart at the party, then have a professional photographer there take a picture of people holding that picture of their heart in front of their heart and put that up on Facebook et cetera, and on his business page, and then have people tag it or tag the people in it, then they then have a contest and say whoever can get the most likes on their photo wins a free space at the weekend that I'm doing on the theme of the heart at the end of this quarter. But have a launch party, consider, for various things that you're doing. And each of these themes, so one's on heart, one's on gender stuff, each of those parties is going to have a different theme, which means it's going to have different hubs and different people you can invite. I'm here in Vancouver right now at the CNN Backpackers Hostel, and tonight I'm hosting a party, and it's a crazy invite list of folks who are coming. And again, I don't live here. I spend very little time here, and yet I'm able to host a party just from a few clients I know. That they're bringing their friends. I've met people over the years, and I got to tell you, yeah, the list of who's coming is sort of off the hook. And what happens with these events and these parties is, like in Toronto, I've developed this reputation of like, wow, when we go to TAD things, we meet awesome people. So again, they're not coming for me. They're coming for the networking and the connection with other folks, which is wonderful. And it's that's just fine. So consider the benefits of this. There are two different types of parties to distinguish. One is the party where you're hosting and you're inviting your clients, best clients, maybe current clients who are going through a project with you. And then you're also inviting hubs. And here's part of the strategic dynamic that happens with this in terms of marketing. The hubs and your best clients are going to be talking to each other, and your best clients love you. And so what happens is that the hub will, they'll be chatting. They'll say, "So how do you know Tad? How are you connected to all of this?" And they'll say, "Oh, I'm one of the, I'm going to Tad's workshop right now. I went to Tad's workshop last year." And then people say, "Oh," and the hub is like, "Well, how was it?" And they really ask, they really want to know. And then my client is like, "Oh, it's really good. It's a great workshop." So check it out. This hub, this person who I may have never met or spent almost any time with, and I don't have that kind of I don't have a lot of time with everybody at the party. I might talk to this hub for 2 minutes, and yet they leave the party with an extremely positive impression of me because of all these things they're hearing from all these people. And because of the nature of the party, because I'm hosting it, every conversation starts with, "And how do you know the host?" That's just, how those conversations are going to go. And I don't need to stand up on a, chair and be everybody listen to me talk for 10 minutes at all. But one of the things I do at the parties is I do a little bit of an introduction circle, and I wouldn't have this go longer than 45 minutes. So I would just divide the time accordingly. And here's a little trick to make it go really smoothly, because here's what happens. When people come to parties, they'll either stick with the people they know, or they'll meet a few people and then they'll just talk to them all evening, and they feel rude about leaving and talking to others, and not everyone's such an eager networker. So one of the things I do is, first of all, something to consider doing is, depending on the size of the party, if it's a small little intimate one, this isn't an issue. But if it's a bigger one, I was just at one in Vancouver called the Power Plant, networking for like sort of the who's who of the green scene in Vancouver. And they had three people, and their only role was to be connectors. So they were meeting everybody and saying, "Hey, who are you? What are you up to? What do you need? Who do you want to talk to tonight?" And then they would like literally just drag me over and introduce me to somebody. Amazing. So if you can do that kind of thing, or if you can play that role yourself, that's awesome. If you can get some friends who are kind of well-connected in the scene to be there, also wonderful. If it's smaller, you probably don't need to worry about that. But at a certain point, if the party started at 7, around 8:30, I would get everyone in a circle, and we would all do a go-around. Everyone would introduce themselves, their name, what they're up to, what's coming up next for them. If we just have like 30 seconds a person, I'm like, "Just tell us who you are and what you're up to." If it's longer, I might say, "What's coming up next for you, and is there anything you're needing?" So I've done that with like 70 people. We had like 30 seconds a person. And that was long. I don't know if I would do that again, but here's how you keep it on track. Have an iPhone or some kind of timer. An iPhone has a little stopwatch thing, and pass it around the circle. And have everyone time the person to their left. And so they'll time, let's say it was 2 minutes per person, you have 20 people. Everyone gets 2 minutes. And you pass around the phone, and when it's like 1 minute, 45 seconds, they just touch the shoulder of the person to their left, and that person knows they have 15 seconds left to wrap up, And then they pass the phone to them and they time it. So you don't have to be the bad cop timing everyone. Anyways, the point is, after this kind of an introduction circle, you get so everyone knows each other now. And you see people just running over to talk to people that they hadn't even met yet at the party. After that circle, the party just like pops up a whole other level. But also, if you've done this thing where you have the photos and the bios written up in advance, people will actually read this before the party. And they'll be like, oh, yeah, I read your thing. I was curious to ask you about this piece. And then after the party, at the end of the circle, I'll say, if there's somebody, you know, at the end of the night you forgot to connect with, or you missed, or you lost their card, forgot their name, don't worry, that page is still going to be up. So you can go, the page is still going to be up, so you can go and find them and follow up with them after. People love it so much. Yeah, and Samia, you got on the call. Welcome. I'm so sorry for the glitch. You'll get all of this in the transcript. So thank you for persisting and half an hour. My God. So I'm glad you're here. Yeah. So that's an idea with parties. The other twist on it is to do not with your clients but just hubs. And here's what this would look like. Check this out as an idea. So let's say you're this realtor, Phoenix Rudner, who works with dog owners. Now, he's in a position where he's going to have to refer out a lot. Or people are going to ask him, hey, do you know any good dog walkers, dog therapists, you know, kennel we can use? They'll just ask him, probably. You know, and the more advice he has, the more they're going to see him as a resource and ask him. And he wants good things he can refer out to, because being a hub, if you can refer good resources, then it makes you look better as a hub, and it's a kind of upward spiral for you. So, of course, that in his own vested interest, he wants to be able to refer out. And most of those businesses he's referring out to are in the same position, needing to refer out for complementary things. So imagine this. Let's say imagine you were a dog grooming company, and you get a call from Phoenix Rudner, an email saying, hey, I came across your business. I've heard good things about it. And so I'm this realtor. I work with dog owners, and I'm reaching out to you because we share a similar target market. I'm reaching out to a bunch of folks who share this target market of dog owners, because I know we're often needing to refer to each other, and I just thought it would make sense for us to get together and meet each other and learn a bit about what each other do, so we'd be in a better position to refer. And so I'm hosting a little wine and cheese, or a little afternoon gathering or evening thing. I figured, you know, we get together at 1, and around 2 we'll do a go-around circle. Everyone will have 2 minutes, and then we'll just mingle afterwards. Boom. You better believe that dog groomer is going to be very excited about that invitation. Consider the little circles, the hubs, or the niches that you've been thinking about working with. And if somebody called you and said, hey, you work with this kind of niche, I thought it'd be cool for us to have this thing. Would you want to come? I'm hosting it for you. Like, would you like me to introduce you to 20 other hubs in your target market? You get it? So powerful. So that's a thought. So Loshui was saying, I'm scared to host parties. It's really embarrassing when they flop, and most of my events have so far. And Tim Emerson said the brilliant thing, co-host. Yes, totally. I would find someone else who's a hub and see if they might want to co-host it. Sometimes you can kind of partner with other people to build it up. And again, try if you – it's so much about who's going to be there. If it's a party for your clients, then that's awesome. If some situations clients don't want to come to parties, the hubs thing, if they see that the other hubs are going to be there, that's the biggest reason why people come. When I started the Youth Jams project in 99, I was getting these people coming to the jams who were just like amazed that I'd gotten them there and amazed that other people were there. And it was 100% because I was telling them who else was coming. I was like, let me send you the bios. And they'd read it and then want to sign up. So, yeah, I get the fear around it. But, yes, definitely consider co-hosting them, partnering, having them hosted by somebody else or in partnership with somebody else. So, yeah, so hubs, gatherings, parties, awards, things. You might also consider hosting a directory. One of my colleagues, Eric Brown, had this brilliant idea of essentially creating a referral directory where you reach out to all the people who you feel awesome referring to right now, and you create like a little page online, like with Yola.com or something like that. Just a private page, and you say, hey, I refer to you, and I just want you to know I've created this directory of the people who I refer to, and you're all, everyone on this list is awesome. Somebody who I feel 100% confident referring to. And I don't know if you all know each other, but you should. So go to this link, check out the directory, know you can refer to each other really strongly. And if there's somebody else who you think should be on this directory that serves this particular niche or addresses this particular issue, whatever the directory is about, email me. I'll make sure they get on the directory, but please refer very carefully. We're doing this as a building it with a circle of trust kind of thing. So again, if you're the one hosting that directory, everyone will remember you. You know, if people come to a Hubs party, a Hubs gathering, they are not going to remember everyone else there, but they will remember you because you're the host. And consider what it does to you when 20, 25 Hubs in the community now know who you are and what you do and are grateful to you for having hosted something for them. Extremely useful. I did this recently in Calgary. We had like 25 people in somebody's living room. It was just bonkers packed. And there were a lot of Hubs there who had heard about me for years, but of course just weren't going to come to my workshop. But they did come to this. And then they got to meet me. I ended up going for coffee with one of them right after. So, yeah, so consider that. So I'd love to pause right now and just see what kind of questions or reflections you have. So a couple things. One is like, what questions do you have about hosting events? But number two, I'm really curious about, do you have any examples of parties that you've done, or do you have any ideas of a party that you might do? So let's take 3 or 4 minutes and just pause, and I'm going to invite you to write on the wall. All right, this is great. Let's just take 1 more minute. 1 more minute. Okay, so let's jump into these questions. Thanks everybody so much for posting. Okay. So Maureen asked, does it make sense to have a party with people in my business of life coaching, as in my so-called competition? that's a great question. I think it's important to, trust your gut on that. There are some people who I would consider competition for me who are just lovely, and I wouldn't consider competition. And other people who maybe trust your gut on it. I tend to love to invite people who also do marketing to my things because I know I can't work with everybody. I just don't have time, and I travel so much, so I love to refer somebody to local sources. So personally, I do. I don't know if I'd pack it with just those people. I trust people can make their own choices, and if somebody resonates with me and wants to work with me, they will, and if they want to work with somebody else, they will. And I also know everybody specializes in slightly different ways, slightly different niches, which is why this whole idea of the platform is so important and some level of clarity about what that is. Lorraine said, any suggestions if your client base isn't local or together, say an internet community with people from around the world? That's a really good question. I don't know. I think having regular calls that you can host, and sometimes doing like a free call to just connect with people or build community in that way. In a way, we're kind of building community here. You could certainly create like a Facebook group that's around hubs and kind of based on that. I think that's possible. But this kind of hosting is definitely more for local. But I don't know, you could do an awards thing. You could do a telesummit, which is also hosting as well. The same kind of principle. You see all these telesummits that are happening where it's like 2 million guest speakers all giving bonuses and, on a certain theme. So those work great and can position you really powerfully as a host as well. So Allison Chan said, you pretty much said this, but when we're hosting a party or something, we don't need to talk at all about our work, right? It's purely a social thing. I wouldn't say not talking about your work at all. I was just saying that I don't do a stump speech or anything. They know who I am because they're coming to my party. So they already have some sense walking in. They're spending the whole night being educated about me, whether they like it or not. So, and then when there's the go-around circle and we have 2 minutes, I sort of do a little welcoming, like, hey, everybody, welcome. Here's why I do these events. This is, thanks for coming. A little bit of context. And then I just say, great, let's do our introductions. I don't even necessarily go first. Sometimes I do just to kind of set the tone, but I'll do 2 minutes of like, here's who I am, here's what I do, just like everybody else. And then I'll pass the timer on and time the person to my left and we'll just keep it going. So I just think it's important not to overdo it because just it's your party. It's they already know who you are. So yeah. So Tim Emerson said, no questions per se. It's something I'd immediately be drawn. It's not something I'd immediately be drawn to, not a party person, but I'm listening, learning, considering. I think I need help identifying potential hubs though. So that's my question. Yeah, hubs. Okay, let's make sure we circle back to that at the end. but here's the thing. If you're not a party person, consider that there might be a different flavor of gathering you might be able to host. For some people, it'd be music and bands and a big loud thing. Somebody else, it might be like a little tea party and very fancy or quiet or a zen kind of gathering. Consider the type of gathering you might be able to host that would be a really authentic reflection of you and your platform. A quiet party for people who hate parties. Awesome. That would be great. Other questions. So the Shui said, I want to help families help their special needs kids with auditory development, a pirate party on a school PD day. Yeah, potentially. Could work. What if you are at the level of building a client base? How would hosting a party work? I'd feel strange hosting a potluck for a hub, people I've never met at my home, but wouldn't want to spend the money on the venue. You might find there's somebody else who already has a venue who would love to have all those hubs in their place, for sure. Yeah, so I don't know the situation with your home and why that might be uncomfortable for you. But yeah, it's funny. It's you'd be surprised how many people say yes to an invite to a really cool party. Like, so I'm in Vancouver. I'm going to Gorilla Foods, this a raw food restaurant, and that's where I've been hanging out a lot. And I've like invited a bunch of the staff to this party that I'm doing tonight. They're like, "Hey, cool people are coming." And they don't know me. I don't even live in this town. I've never met them. I've got zero street cred, but they're still coming to the party. So you might just be surprised. I think the main thing with the kind of invitation, like invite people you feel a resonance with, where you feel that kind of fit, that kind of connection. I think you might just be surprised. So, okay, so Barbara said, "I teach yoga in the Gaspé during the months of July and August. During the summer, I could spend time finding and meeting alternative therapists and other modalities. And then near the end of the summer, host a wine and cheese, invite the yoga students as well as the alternative therapist I've never met and hook them all up." Ah, Barbara, you're brilliant. That's beautiful. and so get that. By doing this, first of all these alternative therapists will get to know Barbara and love her because they're like, she's hooking them up with potential clients for them long term. And you better believe that the next time she comes back in town, it's like, "Hey, I'm doing yoga classes. Can you spread the word?" You better believe they're going to be a lot more excited to spread the word given the generosity they've received from her. So this is what I love about this idea of being a hub or playing the host is like everybody wins. You win. I heard somebody talk about with being a hub, this distinction between status and stature. And status is like, in this rhetoric anyways, status is what everyone's trying to get. And stature is like the, status is like, I don't know, Donald Trump is trying to always get status. Stature is like Martin Luther King Jr., Gandhi, people who we just have such a deep reverence and respect for. So it's like, I think the more we serve our community, the more our stature just authentically grows. So, and that benefits us selfishly, but it's also so good for the community too, because we're making the community tighter. And yeah, so wonderful. What a beautiful idea, Barbara. So Tim Corcoran said, "Here are two fun nature-based gatherings I like to host: a wild foods potluck and a fancy wild foods dinner, where people are served beautiful wild food meals. They pay $50 a plate, and a portion goes to benefit our school." Awesome. Exactly. Yes. That's it. You people are so brilliant. Awesome. So, okay. So, are there any last thoughts around this party idea, questions? If not, I think well. So, Lushree just posted, "Ooh, for the free men and counterculture types, a fuck the system, bad taste party." Boom, there you go. That's it. Awesome. And anything else? Okay. Cool stuff, folks. So hosting, I think you get the sense of what this can do. The minimum I would say is annually host something cool. But you could do something quarterly, you could do something every month. If you are touring like me, just do it when you're in town. These types of things just, yeah, they just work really well, or have worked for me. And by the way, when you're at the Hubs gathering, you're at the party, it's very natural to be able to say, "Hey, we should grab coffee and chat afterwards," and then you can take a next step. So it doesn't all, ha nothing has to happen at the party per se, just next steps. Okay, so next one, let's talk about advertising. So advertising can be a lot of things. It can be posters, it can be direct mail, it can be magazines, Facebook ads, pay-per-click, Kijiji and Craigslist, SEO optimization on your website, Google AdWords. It can be all of that. And here's the main stuff I want to say about advertising. I don't do a lot of it, but actually before we go into it, I'd love to invite anyone to post if you've done advertising and had a lot of success with it. Meaning it's actually helped you get clients or grown your business in some way. I'd love for you to post just a bit about that with advertising. Yeah, so let's pause for a couple minutes just to see if anyone's got any brilliant things to say about advertising from their experience. And I'm curious in particular what it was, but also why you think it worked so well, if it did. Oh, and I totally forgot to do that posting on the wall thing. So I'm just going to post our advertising. Here are all the things I listed. Okay, so yeah. So okay, so if you have any thoughts about advertising, let's put them all under this new post I put up called Advertising with the different links of possible ways to do it. So here's the thing with advertising. First of all, I don't do it. Most practitioners I know don't do it a lot or don't get a ton of response from it. I think the reason a lot of people don't get any response from it is because they're just talking about the boat again. So when you're talking about an ad, the more you're talking about the journey, the better. And LeShui, you wrote that really awesome thing about writing an ad. I'm wondering if you can repost that, cut and paste that under this, because it was so good what you wrote. So here's one thing. First of all, before you, if you're going to place an ad in a magazine, here's one thing you can do that will take you 5 minutes and will potentially save you thousands of dollars, is to call other people who are advertising in that same medium, the same magazine, and ask them if they've gotten a response from it. Huge. Because you may find that one magazine gets a lot of response generally and another one doesn't, even though they're reaching the same market. And that's really good to know in advance. the other one is that it's good to a really good ad. And there's a book I want to pretend is really good, and it's called Monopolize Your Marketplace. Monopolize Your Marketplace. And LeShui, thank you for posting the thing. And I used to hate the title more, but then I thought, well, you know, if holistic, conscious, green, sustainable things monopolize the marketplace, I'd actually be just fine with that. So the book is kind of old school sales, a little aggressively written, but it just has some, it's one of the best structure laid out. Here's how you can write an ad, and I think you can filter it through your own sensibilities. But there's that, and then my colleague Carrie Klassen, she with Pink Elephant Communications, she has a new workbook called Selling Sweetly, and it's how to write sales letters. And the same kind of thinking that goes into how to write a sales letter goes into how to write any kind of advertisement that you're going to put out. The main thing, if you're going to do any kind of advertising, is that there's got to be something that gets their attention, a photo, an image, a headline, almost always usually the headline. It's important. And then it's got to get them to take a next step. In the Monopolize Your Marketplace book, they talk about this idea that there are three roles of marketing, three roles that marketing must play. Number one, it's got to get their attention. Number two, it's got to facilitate the decision-making process. It's hard to make a decision about how to solve a problem, which boat to pick. So the easier you can make that process for them, the better. And third, it's got to lower the risk of taking the first step, which is where pink spoons come back in. The most effective ads I've ever seen are ones that offer a pink spoon. So not come in and book a session, but just here's a way to sample us for free. So I'm also going to post the Selling Sweetly. If you're going to look at Google AdWords, which can work really well, one of my friends, Howie Jacobson, brilliant, lovely man, he's the person I'd recommend for that. I don't have a ton of expertise in a lot of these other things. I know some people get a ton of business from Kijiji and Craigslist. If anyone has any resources around SEO optimization, search engine optimization for websites, or any resources around this kind of advertising, how to write them, or thoughts about them, please feel free to place them here. Again, with advertising, it still comes back to hubs, right? It's still like, who are the people I want to reach? Where do they hang out? Now, if they're on Facebook, you know, of course, you're targeting the ad to particular people with particular interests. But not just interest in the boat necessarily, also interest in the journey long term. So, so let's just take a minute. If anyone has any thoughts, reflections, resources on this, toss them up here. This isn't an area we're going to spend much more time on because this isn't where I think most of the leverage really is for most of you, for most holistic practitioners. But it is a totally valid path, especially if you're zoning in on a particular niche. So let's just take 1 minute. If anyone has any more thoughts about advertising, put it there. If not, we'll move on. Cool. Awesome. Thank you for posting these resources. We've got Lorraine just posted a good search engine optimization device, highrankings.com/SEO-resources. Cool. Awesome. So great. Okay, so let's move on to the next one, which is PR. And again, this one will be a quick one because I don't have a ton to say about it personally, but I do have some resources to suggest. So PR is where you kind of get to be known in the media and by the media as an expert in something, where you get featured on the radio, in newspapers and magazines, TV, all of that. And so you'll see, I've just posted PR up there, it's the new heading. And this is one of these things where it's a path, right? And I've seen so many people get a ton of PR, a ton of press coverage, and it not turn into any business because there's no bucket, there's no container to hold it. And so it just literally washes through. They go to a website where there's nowhere to sign up. So this can be sort of an illusion that's like, oh, I'm going to be a celebrity and everyone will know me. And I know a lot of people who are really well known in their communities, and everyone assumes they're rich. Everyone assumes they're doing really well because they're everywhere, and everybody knows them and loves them, but they're actually secretly struggling. So getting known is not the only goal here, but it can work. PR requires that you be in the spotlight. So if you're the kind of person that just doesn't like to be in the spotlight very much, this conversation is probably not for you. But some people really secretly enjoy being in the spotlight and being seen and being the expert, and so that can be great. And again, there are probably different ways to approach this in terms of how high profile you're going to be. But a few resources. One, radiopublicity.com. It's a fellow who's figured out how to, he gets a lot of press coverage on morning radio shows, and he gets all this free press and like builds his business in his pajamas in the morning on these radio shows. Hedquist.com, a colleague and friend of mine, Jeffrey Hedquist from Fairfield, Iowa, and he has got brilliant thoughts to say around creating radio ads if you want to do that. Sean TV, Sean Duperin, word of mouth marketing specialist, PR specialist, and AuthenticVisibility.com, a colleague of mine, Nancy Jutton. They all have brilliant things to say. PR can be really great and important in terms of establishing yourself as an expert. Instead of advertising, instead of spending money on ads that people often inherently don't trust because they know it's an ad, PR is like, you know, there's a book written called The Death of Advertising, The Rise of PR. And their thing was basically like, hey, people trust ads less and less. So getting PR and getting press coverage, people trust what's in a paper a lot more than an advertisement. So this can be a really brilliant path to be getting clients. Again, the key is a very solid container and pink spoons. So when people show up curious from this media publicity, there's something to hook them in if it feels like a fit, and to start cultivating that relationship, as opposed to them just hearing about you, being momentarily inspired, and forgetting about you. Is it PR, Lishui asked, is it PR when you write contentious letters to the editor or otherwise do a publicity stunt? I guess that could be a part of a PR strategy, being seen as the advocate for, you know, a certain thing. Yeah, absolutely. I guess that could be PR if you're covered by the press. Yeah. And here's the thought. With PR, it depends the level of game you're playing. Some people just want to play a very small local game, and that's beautiful. Other people want to sort of step into a different kind of game where it's just a lot more press and being branded and speaking a lot and playing at that level. If you're drawn to that, and I would first of all dissuade you, it's a lot of work. But if you are genuinely drawn to that, the media gets less and less forgiving the higher up you go. You know, the stuff that we can get away with, the mumbling and the ums, like I'd probably get slaughtered in the national media. I'm just not ready for that. I don't have my sound bites and everything. So it's very forgiving in a small level. The higher up you get, the less forgiving the glare of that spotlight is. So if you're going to go to that level, get help. Get a coach. Get somebody who's an expert, unless you're already an expert in it. So let's just take a minute and pause, see if anyone else has any reflections or thoughts on the whole PR piece. If you do, please write them under the PR thing that I posted. Thoughts on that? A few, yes, wonderful. Let's see what people said. Sorry, my computer's being a bit slow. Is radio pub.com free? I don't know. Not sure. Okay. So no big thoughts on that. So let's talk about number nine. You'll see I posted virtual presenting, number nine. So virtual presenting. So whereas presenting and doing public speaking is live and in person, this is podcasts, teleconferences, webinars, interviews, funny internet cartoons. So some of you have seen the Marketing Bears conversation that I did where the little bears talk about niche marketing, and that one got spread around a little bit. If you check out, there's a website, extranormal.com. I'll just post that here. This is where you can make those hilarious internet cartoons. Super fun. I almost lost a week of my life just getting lost in those. But so anything where you're presenting online, over the phone, like we're doing here, this would be virtual presenting. There's a colleague of mine, George Kao. If you check out George, K-A-O, georgekao.com. He's kind of getting out of this gig, but he's worth checking out because he's got a really brilliant thought about how do you use webinars as a way to promote and fill your practice, especially not so much if you're local, but if you work globally, over the internet. So yeah, virtual presenting can be super awesome. So let's just pause and see if anyone has any resources, thoughts, questions on presenting over the internet. Let's take a couple minutes to see what you got. Okay, so Bill Barron, yes, he's offering a training these days on teleseminars. So if you go to Bill Barron, BARREN.com, I believe there's probably a link to there somewhere for his teleseminar training, which he just started. I can tell you, teleseminars are great. Just low expenses, but you can reach a lot of people. It's a really beautiful income stream to add. But when we're talking about it, so it can be part of the container, but it's part of the path we'd be talking about, like doing the free intro webinars. And Tim Emerson was just saying you get slammed with webinars, and they usually have two good ideas buried in 90 minutes of babble. I've been having that frustration myself, even with some of the people I've hosted to do like the free webinars, and not thrilled with the level of value that's come out of it sometimes. Here's the main thing to think about if you're gonna do the these kind of free intro webinars, and think of this also for your free intro workshops that you do. It's really important that you give people a sense of the map. For me, there's this map of the platform, the container, and the paths. So even though when I do an intro, it's almost all talking about the platform, I make sure I name those other two. So if you do an intro, don't try to cover everything in the whole, that you know in every detail, because it'll overwhelm people. And it also gives them the sense, oh, I learned everything and now I don't need this person's help. And they probably still do. So consider focusing on one part of it, but still giving them the context of everything that's needed, if that makes sense. Like here, you need to know the platform, the container, the paths, and tonight we're going to focus on the platform. And here's why, but here's why these other two parts matter and how they fit helps a lot. And it's really useful. So any other thoughts on this virtual presenting? Again, this isn't something I've specialized in, but I know it can be powerful. Interviews are a really powerful thing to do as a path to get people to find you, either being interviewed by somebody else or you interviewing them. So interviewing them or having them interview you. So if there's somebody who's a hub and they can interview you and then post that and share that with their people, you'd be surprised how many people will come to your website. And if you have the free gift, et cetera, a good container, you'll capture a lot of that. And if you interview other people, they'll often share that with their list and you'll still get some of their folks too. So consider thinking about who are the experts in your scene and can you interview them? And that could be, by the way, it could be over the phone, it could be a Skype thing. You could even type out the questions, have them answer, post it on your blog, and they'll probably share it with their folks. Like, hey, look at this, I just got featured here, and some of those people will find you. Let's see. Okay, so let's move on to the last one, then we'll move into Q&A. The last one is about free sessions, doing free sort of introductory sessions as a way to get clients. So number 10, free sessions. So I just posted that. Here's the challenge with free sessions is that the way that most people do them doesn't work. The way that most people do them doesn't get clients. The best resource I can recommend is Mark Silver. He has his Sacred Selling Home Study course. So I just posted that link there. He's the person who I most respect and love, probably in the marketing sphere these days, and how to have a sales conversation that really honors the other person. Part of the challenge is when people do a free one-on-one session, they either just give it away, they do the session, and the person, because they didn't invest very much, doesn't get, I think, as much out of it. And also, I would submit that in that free session, we probably actually don't really get the nature of their situation. And so the advice we're giving is probably not as good as it could be. Bill Barron talks about this a lot with his Master of Enrollment program. Mark Silver echoes a similar theme. Here are basically four steps when you do a free session. And again, check out if you're drawn to this idea of doing these free things, it's great. The free intro sessions, by the way, this is where the sales funnel comes in. You don't want to do a free thing to sell them an ice cream cone. You want to do a free session to sell them like a cake or a subscription to a club, to sell them a much bigger kind of a package, which is where, thinking through that sales funnel, designing those kind of packages comes in, so it becomes so important. So I don't have any of these packages yet. I might at some point, but let's say I were to develop, let's say around niche, because people struggle with that. So let's say I was going to develop a niche coaching program, and I actually wanted, and it was going to be like a lot of money, and so it justified me spending time kind of talking people through it. I'm probably not going to do that, but let's say that were to happen, or you have some program, you're like, God, this is a more high-end program, it costs more money, people are a little more nervous about it, am I going to get the money's worth, and you really want to make sure you get the right people into this thing so that you know it's a fit, because if they're all the right people, it's going to be good vibes, they're going to rave about it, everyone's going to get good results, there's going to be no buzzkills in the group, complaining. So you really want to make sure they're a fit. So you do these one-on-one things. So that's the first thing. The free session is not there to like convince them to work with you. The free session is really there to see if it's a fit. And there are four things, four elements of it. The first one is to really get clear on island B. Where do they want to go? So that's the first question, is like, where do you want to go? Where do you want to be? You know, why are you coming to see me? What's the result that you're looking for? And to really listen, to reflect back what we're hearing, to absorb it, to kind of dig into that a bit, to not assume that we really understand what they want. The second question is just, where are you now? So really listening in for island A, some empathy, just how is it for them? You know, that's a great question I got from Jesse and Charlotte Jacobs, is just that, how is it for you, this situation? And to really listen and to get it, what island A is for them. The third question is just, what's stopping you? what's stopping you from getting from island A to island B? So now you're starting to learn about their map, their point of view. And you're starting to get a sense of if it's a fit and if you can help them or not. And then the fourth question, or the fourth thing to talk about, is, okay, here's how I think I can help you or not. So those four things. First of all, where do you want to be? Where are you? What's in the gap? Okay, based on all that, here are my thoughts about how I can help, and the next steps. But what most people do for the free sessions is they just jump right into advice. They jump right into trying to solve the problem. And then the person leaves being like, great, thanks for the homework. I'm going to work on that, and I'll get back to you when it's done. And I think that ends up often just being a disservice to them and to us, and you know, it just does get us a lot of business. So instead of that, we want to slow down and really see if it's a fit. And also, first of all, if I were going to do those calls, I wouldn't even want to have one of those calls unless that person was already pretty clear they were a fit, which is why all this work around the platform and establishing who's a perfect fit comes into play. Because when you're writing a sales letter, you know, even a sales letter for, hey, if you'd like a complimentary session, I would still want it to be really clear. You know, this is who this is for. This is who this is not for. So free sessions can be a very powerful way when you've got higher end things. Tim was asking, so when people want a $333 reconnection and should have a healing session for $65, I do the healing for free. Is that the kind of thing you mean? No. I mean that you have that kind of conversation about the islands and the journey. And Lauren, thank you for the very accurate summary of what I said. I think you got it. So it's, where do you want to be? Number two is, where are you right now? Number three is sort of, what's in the gap? What's stopping you? What's between those islands for you? And then the fourth is just based on hearing all of that and really absorbing it, you just share honestly what you think is the best for them. Because the truth is, they might come to you and they say, I've got this problem. And as you listen, you're like, oh, this isn't actually that serious. We could deal with this in one session. Then that's what you say. Or you might listen and say, wow, this is years of work. You can just be honest and say, look, this is years of work. I think we should start with a like series of 9 sessions or 12 sessions or a weekly session, you know, for the next year. And I would give them options, like here are 3 levels we could work at. You'll be surprised and shocked how many people will want to go for some of the higher levels. So number 2 is, where are you now, right? So, so free sessions, there's so much to go into here. That's a real cursory overview. But if any of you have any resources or suggestions or thoughts or reflections, let's just pause and have you share those now. Maureen was saying this was a really helpful piece of the program, because we're so often we want to just give the work away, and we're not always sure that it's a win-win. Yeah, it's so easy to just want to give what we do away, which is why the pink spoons, I think, for people to be educated before it's like any of my personal time goes into it. They can read an ebook, they can watch some videos, they can check out my blog, all of that can happen. And then before they ever talk to me, if I was going to talk to them about a bigger level package, I just want to know they're probably already a fit, because they've been filtered through the sales funnel. Almost like with the sales funnel, it's like between every level, there's like a sieve, you know, there's a screen that sort of gets finer and finer, making sure that what you're getting at the end is what you really want. Yeah. Okay. So those are the 10 paths. So here's what I want you to do right now. So I'm going to post something new here. So here's the question. The question is, which are your top three paths to fiddle with? You've had 10 paths presented over the course of this, and I'm curious for you, which are the top three? So I'm going to type them out, but I'm just going to, you can post your comments under this. But so we've got, let's see if I can remember them all, writing, speaking, networking, hosting, social media, PR, advertising, virtual presenting, free sessions, I think, and community building. How many of those? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. I feel like I'm missing one. Presenting, free sessions, PR, advertising, hosting. Is that it? I feel like I'm missing one. Anyways, here are the ones that I've got so far. So under that, which I just posted, I want you to take a look at that and pick the three which you're the most excited to focus on. So pick the three you're the most excited to explore. So let's take a couple of minutes for that. Awesome. So here's something I'm noticing and looking at is all of you have a slightly different combination of these things. All of you, I don't know if anyone's picked the same three. Oh, Yanina went for 5. Bam. Yeah, you all seem to have a slightly different combination of it, which is great. You know, there's no one size fits all for all of this. Yeah. Okay, so let's just see if there are any questions. So Tim said, I don't get them all yet, like free sessions. I'm good at writing, speaking, and PR. Where would workshops and flyers fall? So flyers, I would say, would be would fall under the advertising category for me. Flyers or posters or that kind of thing. And workshops, it depends. This is where the paths can kind of become the container. Like an intro workshop to me would be like a free intro workshop would just be a path. But then they start paying and it becomes part of the sales funnel. It becomes part of the container. But then that, workshop becomes a path to the next thing. So they do kind of blend together. Cool. Awesome. So I really want to invite you to make notes of those top three and really decide to focus on them. You've gotten lots of resources on different ones of those. So whichever of those ones are, I want to invite you to explore some resources that you got or know of, or learn more about those, become better at those, become craftspeople in those particular paths. Take three and really work them, really hone in on them, and then let yourself expand beyond that if you need to. So, here we are, everybody. I can't even believe it. I'm so sad. 6 weeks is over. This is crazy. So now we're gonna open it up to the final Q&A. So I'm gonna just post this here. So final Q&A. So if you have any final questions that you would love some help with, post them under that comment there. Final Q&A. So let's take about 3 minutes, 4 minutes, just. See, check in with yourself, see if there are any questions that, if you could get these answered by the end of the call or some direction on it, would be really useful for you. So we'll take 3 or 4 minutes. Oh, and then I'll probably talk about what's next, the next level, which doesn't exist yet, but I would be welcome to your thoughts on this. Yeah, thanks for asking, Tim. Some other folks have been curious too. So what questions? What are the last questions or wonderings you have right now? Okay. Thanks for all the questions, everybody. Let's dive into it. Okay, so Maureen was asking, do I still do one-on-one sessions? I do. I charge $200 an hour for the one-on-one sessions, and I'm on the road until mid-April, so I just won't be able to do any one-on-one sessions really until, mid to late April. So if you're interested in booking one, I'm, of course, excited about that. So yes, there's that. So while I'm doing the Q&A, I'm going to post this up here. So ideas for the Marketing 202 course. So I haven't designed any kind of follow-up thing for this. So the sales funnel stops here right now, but I'm open to doing another one. Yeah, and I'd really love to get any of your ideas or thoughts. So I'm posting this now. So if you have any ideas for what you would want to see in a follow-up to this, what would be actually really useful for you and most valuable, please feel free to post that there. Some people have been asking if this group's going to stay up. This group will stay up forever in my mind. I probably won't be participating in it after this. But I'm so stoked for you all to be continuing to be collaborating with each other for sure. Let's see. Can I buy coaching time and get my late assignments reviewed? Yes, you can. And yeah, the 201. There's a. Okay, so question from last week: how to create a community when your yoga clients are only meet through the studio you teach at? Technically, they're the studio's clients, right? So, okay, so you're in a situation where you're a teacher in this place, and the clients belong to the studio, not to you. Well, I think if you were to host some special events and you wanted to let the students know about that, I don't know. I think it depends. I don't know that your relationship to the studio or how strict they are with the rules about gathering the contact info of the students. But I think it could happen very organically and very naturally and slowly, where you start to just host cool events. And you might be able to host events through the yoga studio as well. And maybe you could be helping to foster their community. And while you're doing that, also building these more personal connections and saying, hey, I'm going to be hosting other events. If you'd like to find out about the events I'm hosting outside of this yoga studio, sign up for this here. So I think there's a question of like the ethics of that in terms of what arrangement you have. But then it's just a question of the best way to get their contact info. And that can be just a clipboard that you pass around during the class or that you have at the front if they want to sign up. Or if you're doing events there, that they register and you could get permission from them to say, hey, can I also ask people if they want to opt into my own, events list, that type of thing. So it's hard to say without knowing more about the details. Okay, so would love some perspectives on pay what you can gifting approach to business. Well, if you're interested in that, you should come to the workshop that I'm doing in the Bay Area with my friend Amatma called Fuck Money. So I'll post the link to that in this chain of Q&A. Actually, I'll just post it on the top. Yeah, if you're interested in that conversation, I would come to that, which I think you're going to be, Kathy. I've never really done the gifting thing. Ooh, wow, it says the link is blocked. I bet it's because it has a bad word in it. So I'm going to break up the link. So you have to like take the space out, but I think this will work now. Yes. So pay what you can versus the gifting approach. Yeah, I don't know how much I have to say about it. Pay what you can has worked really well for me. Gifting approach for Amatma has worked pretty well. I mean, I think it's been pretty tight. So I'm not sure what your particular question is. So maybe if you have a sub question underneath that, because it feels like there's a lot to talk about there. So do you have any further support to offer for SRE newsletters? Seems like a big area. I'd love some support here. Yeah, I think did I post this? Check out clairecommunications.com. So Claire Communications, I believe. Let me just see. She's there we go. Yeah, she helps folks with their newsletters and such. So I'll post this in the chain here. She's the sort of main person I know around that. How might we as hubs serve each other? I commend finding out. How quickly should we expect to see results if we're on the right track? So this is Lishui saying, how quickly should we expect to see results if we're on the right track? Is good marketing something I should do for weeks or months and then slowly start to see growth from there, or should I expect to see immediate results from each campaign to know that I'm on the right track? I think it's a bit of both. If you're not seeing any immediate results, I would question it, but it's not all going to be immediate. You know, it's like for me going to Toronto, sure, you know, my marketing might be good, but the fact that I've been there so many years, and by the time people come to my workshops, they've been hearing about me for years from people they really love and respect. That's a real dominant force. So I think it is a both. It's a tortoise and the hare sort of a situation. I would also say that the more tightly focused the niche is, the faster you're going to see results. So the more clear a niche project you have, the faster things are going to turn around. When it's just really broad and trying to reach everybody, I would expect that to be slow, period. But I think you should see some results right away. if you're not getting any results, nobody signing up for any of you, then that's definitely a challenge. Okay, also Ted, tips on integrating all we have done in this class onto a website. What goes where? I've been using Carry Classes 2 workbooks, but I wonder if you have any thoughts, suggestions. Yeah, you know, there's a great, I think, I can't remember if I added this to the resources on that. I might have forgotten it. There's a website, Client Attracting Websites. A colleague of mine, Juliet Austin, who's in Vancouver here, she's created, and it's sort of how to create a website, what goes on which pages and all of that. So I'd recommend that as sort of a general resource. And then integrating it, you know, it's interesting. So when we're talking about integrating, we're really talking about integrating the platform. So the boat, you, the journey, point of view, the why, ILNC. So I think the journey is really the homepage for the most part. You is the captain. That's the bio page. The point of view is kind of, and the why, I think, are infused in every part of it. I think it's one of those things. It's in the color. It's in the logo. It's something that we can't really tease out of anything. It's just hopefully ever present in every blog post that we write. Yeah. So I hope that's useful. So let's see. Can you give us a final assignment that summarizes everything that we've learned here? You know, my final assignment would be do the niche project. Actually do it. Really hone in on a niche project and apply it. And take the paths that resonate most and fill it and make it work. And continue to support each other in that. If you can, it's wonderful. And, you know, also colleagues and friends you have who aren't a part of this group. The biggest thing I can say, actually, most important of any kind of suggestion I can give for following up is something I'll only tell you if you join the 202 level. No, it's getting a marketing buddy. Get somebody who you can consistently be checking in with about your marketing. This group is fine, and I would have somebody you can one-on-one or in a very small group on a regular basis, once a month minimum, once a week would be awesome. That's the most powerful thing I can suggest, because it's so easy to avoid doing this. I avoid doing my own marketing, and I teach this stuff. You know, it's easy to not go to the gym, even when you've made a real commitment to yourself. But if somebody is pulling up in their car, you just throw your sweats in a bag and you go. So get a marketing buddy. Lishui said, one of your ebooks, The Horrible 100, talked about a marketing system. So what's a marketing system? Good question. I wrote that 9 years ago, so I'm trying to remember what I was talking about. I think for me, it's like a marketing system is basically the sales funnel, but having the sales funnel really well thought out. So it's like, so it becomes more of a system. It becomes something that happens really automatically and consistently. So, you know, you do a free intro, and at that, you make an offer of something else, and then there's some email that you've pre-written that they can get, and it's a almost automated at a certain level, whereas you don't have to reinvent the wheel every single time you do it. So it becomes more of a system, not a scattershot approach to it. And even if you're doing a new thing, you still think through it systemically of the sales funnel. Like, okay, what's going to be the pink spoon? What's next? What's after that? And what connects those different levels? Like, okay, they come in for a free thing, but then how do we make sure they know that there are ice cream cones that they can buy? And then creating like checklists and systems. So you make sure, you just to make it easy for yourself. It's systems equal self-care. Yeah. So we need. people are wanting me to wrap this up with a pithy kind of summary of everything. I invite you all to learn to live with disappointment on this one. I don't know if I can do it. Let's see all the things I teach you spiritually, all the opportunities I give you. Yeah, I don't know. Let me see if anything comes out at the end of this. So, okay, so how do we break into a new niche or expand our awareness of possible niches? Here's a great thing I'd suggest that I found works really interestingly for expanding the awareness of possible niches is to basically sit down with some folks and be like, here's my boat. Here's my point of view. Here's why I do it. This is me as the captain. Generically, this is the journey I take people on. And then to ask them, who do you think would be into this? You'll be shocked. People come up with like the coolest stuff. So tell people your platform, as much as you can, and then be like, here's who I focus on already, but like, who else would be into this? You'll get some really neat ideas. I've been doing that at workshops, and people like sometimes change niches just because they got such a great one from somebody. And how do you break into a new niche? Yeah, hubs. It's all about the hubs when you break into a new niche. But I would also say when you break into a new niche, slowly. Take your time. Maybe don't make it a break-in. Maybe get yourself invited for dinner rather than the break-in-enter. Yeah, if you like, I'm wanting to work more with permaculture folks. So part of it is like go to their events, start to meet the community, connect with folks, build relationships, see how you can support what's already going on. So yeah, I would say slowly through hubs, build relationships. It's funny when I say slowly, by doing it slowly, it happens much more quickly. Yeah. And okay, let me just see if there's any last questions. I'll see if I have any amazing words to leave you inspired and with everything distilled. Where's our graduation party? I don't know. Who wants to throw the graduation party? Somebody who had that in your top three things. Oh my gosh, here's this whole page of questions. Okay, let's see what we got. So looking down the roads, what suggestions do you have for keeping the platform current, adding, removing niches? How often to do projects? Is it a dry run for the sales funnel, then updating the website and other materials based on platform tweaks? Wow, that is, I think, going to be a super personal thing for each person because some people are just more creative and want to change things up more. And some people like to just have it be, consistent and solid. So I don't know if I have an answer to that. I know one person who every year they review their niches. They sit down like, are these the groups that we want to be working with? And sometimes yes, sometimes no. So I think the idea of an annual retreat where you just kind of sit back and you reflect on it is really probably useful. Yeah, what suggestions to keeping the platform current? The truth is you don't need somebody like me or a workshop or a retreat, but the truth is you probably do. I know I do. It's like I love Byron Katie's stuff, The Work, but I went to a 5-day retreat because that like gave me the space to do it. So I don't know whether it's working with me or somebody else. I think anywhere you can go where you can have the space to just focus on that, to do a bit of a business retreat where there's some structure to it, and where you can share it with people and check in, I think that's really useful. Lorraine also asked, want to confirm, is the platform based on the big circle, but you focus on plugging container leaks based on the small circles? For example, would you have three sales funnels for each of the niches? So the platform is Yeah, probably based on the big circle. Although there'll be a slightly different platform for each small circle, I would say. And yeah, for basically for each niche, you're going to have your own. It's like there's a sales funnel, and within that sales funnel, you're going to have smaller one sales funnels. Picture that how you will. But yeah, you will for each niche, for each project, it'll be its own sales funnel. For every single event, its own sales funnel. Yeah, yes. So another one from Lorraine. You discussed items like books, workshops, presentations, video, community as part of both the container, packages, programs, products, and paths, writing presentations. Are these the same items that happen to be used for two purposes, or would you have two items, one tweak to be more suited for a container, and one tweak to be more suited for the path? So the path to me is just what gets them to you. So pink spoons, basically. But anything that gets them to you, any way that they can just come across you and find you is a path. After that, those same, it's like when I was in London, England, you'd be going down a street called like Fort Street. And you'd cross the street and it would suddenly be Bank Street. And it didn't turn, but then it would suddenly be Johnson Street. And you were walking in a straight line and it just kept changing names. So I think it's a similar thing here. Like something that's a path, once it's a pink spoon, or you know, once they've sampled it and they're into the funnel, now it becomes part of your container, and it's still a path to the next level. I hope that made sense. Number two, let's say I create a pink spoon video explaining my point of view or my why. Is that a pink spoon, or just using video instead of text to explain who I am? If one criteria of pink spoon is providing value to the potential client. Is knowing more about me and my platform considered receiving value or enough value to look at cones or buckets? I'm thinking back to Lucia's project, as you suggested, interviews with designers. A video describing my point of view or why doesn't seem to be in the same ballpark as interviews with people in the industry. Yeah, okay, so it could be valuable. Yeah, your point of view, the why probably isn't value, but it's probably going to be, will help them resonate. And know if it's a fit without it being a pitch. What you don't want, like a TV commercial, is not a pink spoon. It's an ad. Because there's no value. It's just teasing you about something. I think point of view is very much valuable. Because people are stuck. They have problems and they want a map that's going to get them from island A to island B. So anytime you talk about your take on things, your point of view, I know that's been incredibly valuable for me to hear. And it's probably the reason that most of you are actually doing the work you do is because somebody gave you a map. And I think it's good to frame the point of view in valuable ways. You know, like four things that keep you from achieving this, or the three blunders that people make, or six most important elements to this. The more you can frame it in a way that's like, here's how this is relevant to you in your journey, the better. Number three. On the subject of complimentary sessions, Seth Godin talks about competing on price as being a race towards the bottom or zero. If people use a complimentary visit, no monetary risk to them, do you start establishing a relationship based on money rather than value? Would asking full price and providing introductory added value be more effective, more along the lines of what we're delivering? It's a really good question, actually, because there are a lot of opinions. There's a guy named George Huang, H-U-A-N-G, and he doesn't do free sessions. He charges a lot for his intro sessions, and he does really well. He did the free sessions for a while, and then he switched right over to these paid sessions, and he provides coaching on how to do that. To me, there is this question of investment, because it's a similar thing where people, you know, say with pay what you can. Well, if people come and it's pay what you can, they're not investing anything. Will they really see the value? Which is why now I have a $100 deposit, you know, and then people for my weekends, and then people pay on top of that for the pay-what-you-can portion. And what else do I want to say about that? Or like giving people homework to do so they're invested. Filtering people a bit so that people know they have to kind of work for it. It's not just a given. yeah. It's why I don't do a lot of complimentary or free kind of consultations, and I would only do it if I felt like it was a fit, like they'd gone to a workshop and they were leaning in and they really saw it was valuable, and why that whole conversation would be about establishing, is this a fit and how I can help. And by the way, with the free sessions, let me say this, because I think sometimes it can seem like, oh, well, just asking those questions isn't that valuable for people to say, where do you want to be? Where are you? What's in the gap? And I would disagree. I did a session with the folks at the Authentic Man program in the Bay Area, some of you are familiar with, and I got taken through this process. And I kind of knew what was going on, and so I thought, oh, maybe this is going to feel gross. It actually felt awesome. I'd never had anyone ask me what I wanted in a relationship and listen like that and reflect back what they heard. And nobody had ever asked me, like, what's in the gap? What's in between? You know, so it was actually so valuable for me. Yeah, and so here's the thing, though. With the whether we charge for them or we do the free session, to me it's just a question of what's the most effective strategy. Because if somebody's going to sign up for a bigger coaching package, it's just like that's a huge risk. So whether it's that you charge for that initial session or you do it free, there still has to be some way they can sample. Yeah, and there has to be some way that you can establish whether it's a fit and they can figure out whether it's a fit. So I don't think it matters which particular process you use. But those things have to still happen. Number four, what's your opinion on providing guarantees and how effective are they in lowering barriers, reducing risk in the mind of the potential client? When is a guarantee too little to be effective and too much to be believed? Wow, great question. Guarantees are awesome. They're huge. I think they still have carry an idea that we didn't really get into, but when we're talking about the boat, and it's kind of related to Pink Smooth, this idea of the wall of risk. That's like your client is standing on one side of the wall and you're on the other, and they like want to work with you. They want to get onto your side of the wall, but the wall is too high. They literally just can't jump over it. And that wall is all the perceived risks that they see. And if you could knock that wall in half or eliminate it or even reverse it and turn it into a little downward slope where it's so easy and natural for them to come to you, that would do more to grow your business and get more people to your boats than just about anything that I know of. It really directly addressing that risk. Guarantees are one way, and a very effective way, I would say, of reducing the risk. But word of mouth, testimonials, working with hubs, those are all also ways of reducing risk. When is it too little to be effective? I don't know. When it's like 10% or guarantee. I don't know how a guarantee could be too little, but I would say if you have a guarantee and it's like this is good for 1 week, you'll get a lot of refunds on that. Lifetime guarantees almost never get refunds because people are always like, oh, I can do it later. So I'd be wary about having the guarantee be too brief a period of time. I've seen the like double your money back guarantees, like, hey, if this doesn't work for you, I'll not just refund this, I'll give you double your money back. And here the question is, how much does it increase the sales to offer that kind of a guarantee or that kind of a risk reversal? And often it's substantial. Often it really does increase it enough that it's like, yes, you're going to get more refunds, but not that many more. And in the long run, you're going to be 10 times ahead of where you would have been. Kathy said, do you see a fundamental difference? Kathy asked, do you have a resource for a really good storyteller? I'm not sure if you mean storyteller in marketing or just storyteller. GetStoried.com, GetStoried. GetStoried.com is a great resource around using storytelling and marketing. Let's see. So if our niche... Okay, so Allison was asking if our niche project is something not directly connected to our work, like hosting a party or community event, how do we let the attendees know about what we do in a way or in how it might be relevant for them? Or is it a more of a passive exposure, you know, getting used to your face or your brand? Can you give us an example of an event? For me, it's definitely been more of a sort of passive, long-term relationship building kind of thing. When I've got a weekend workshop coming up, let's say, and I host the party, I'll do about it. during my 2 minutes in the circle, say, hey, I have this weekend workshop coming up. But also there are going to be people there who are hubs, and I'll probably send them a personal email saying, hey, I was wondering if you might be able to help spread the word on the weekend. And I'll work through the hubs. Again, networking for hubs, not necessarily just clients, and then letting the hubs do the marketing for you tends to be much stronger. But it's an excellent question, because this is the sales funnel question again. You've got the pink spoons, and you've got this ice cream cone. How do you make sure that there's a connection between the pink spoon and the ice cream cone? Because otherwise you're just giving away pink spoons, and even though you have the cones, nobody's asking for them. So I don't have a direct answer, because I think every situation is different, but that is the critical question. How do you make sure that there is some connection to that? And sometimes it can just be standing up and being like, hey, here's what I do, and I've got this email list. If you're interested in this, if this resonates with you, sign up on the email list and I'll be in touch. And then knowing that it may take a while for them to become clients. Lorraine asked, what are some tips for taking an ordinary project and turning it into a wonderful and delighting project? Here's some thoughts. The first one is to ask yourself, when you look at the boat that you've got and the journey that you take people on, to ask yourself sort of, what's most important to the people I want to reach when buying what I sell? So if you're going to buy a car, you'll be like, well, what's most important to people in buying a car? What's most important to people in hiring a landscaper? And really get clear of, like, from their side, what matters most to them. British Airways did a survey of their clients in first class and said, what can we do to increase service? And they thought, can we offer you more? Can we bring you more snacks or drinks? And their thing was like, let us sleep. Just leave us alone on this flight so we can sleep. That's what we want. So knowing what's most is important to them is the key. But here's an interesting thing we didn't go into, but I call it the attraction quadrant. So if you think of it like a quadrant, four squares. And one square is like, there are things about your business that are attractive to you. And there are things about your business that are attractive to your client on the other side. So things for your client, things for you, things that are attractive and unattractive. So there are things that are attractive about your business to you. Make sure that there are more of those. Build that, deepen that. Things that are attractive to your client, the things that your client loves the most about what you do. For me, it's the fact that they're pay what you can, that I tell these hilarious jokes that everybody loves at my workshops. And so that might be part of what's attractive. And the fact that it's all conscious, kind of cool entrepreneurs that they get to hang out with. But there are also some things that are unattractive to me about my business. So, you know, it's like, God, I travel so much and I don't get to be home, and that can be kind of draining. That's a little unattractive sometimes, even though I get to see wonderful people. What else is unattractive to me? Other things, you know. And then, but to them, there may also be some things that are unattractive. There are elements of the pay you can that are not that attractive because it's going to be stressful for people. There are elements of the workshops I could probably improve. So I think the key with this attraction quadrant is to reduce or eliminate any of the things that are on the unattractive side to you and or your client, to both of you, and then to maximize the things that are attractive to both of you, and then to deepen all of that is a place I would start. And I think what also takes it from an ordinary project to something wonderful is really being clear on the platform. Who is this for? Who are these people? The clearer that is, the easier it is to make it something delightful and wonderful. And then just to trust your instinct to be creative in the way that you express it. Yeah. Barbara said, is there a time frame? I'm following this last. If I come up with questions after digesting the material and trying to put into use, yeah, it's going to have to wait till mid-April, because that's when I am free again. What else? Is there any last questions? Okay, I think we're good. Thank you everybody so much for this 6 weeks. It's been so wonderful. I'm so glad we did this Facebook group. Yeah, it was such a last minute thing, but it turned into such a wonderful community. It's so beautiful to see you all supporting each other so well. So thank you so much. You're all just really wonderful. And yeah, I encourage you to be staying in touch with each other and to connect with each other and support each other. This group is going to stay up. If you want to work with me, of course, I'd be delighted with that when I'm back home. And yeah, and please, all of your ideas for the 202 are most welcome. Yeah, I'd love to know what would be useful for you. I probably won't even be able to look at it until I get back in early April, but sometime in May or June, I might be able to throw something together. So, gosh, what do I want to say? I love you all. Thank you so much for doing this, for supporting me in my livelihood, supporting each other. And I'm going to open up maybe the lines just one time so we can all say goodbye to each other. Hey everybody, goodbye.
Hey,
Dad.
Thank
bye,
you.
Chad.
Thank
Thank
you
you.
So much.
Bye. Bye,
Thanks,
everyone.
Chad.
Sunny.
Bye, everybody. Goodbye, everyone.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Good luck.
See you on
Goodbye,
the flip
John Boy.
side.
See you on Facebook.
Yeah.